Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. Today, I'm joined by Jordan Gisugi of the Limiting Factor YouTube channel. He covers battery tech and especially keeps a pulse on what Tesla is doing with battery plans. So I wanted to invite Jordan back on my show to kind of do a status check on where Tesla is with their battery plan. So Jordan, welcome back on the show. How have you been?
Not too bad, thanks. I'm in the middle of a move, so that's awesome. Why everything's sparse behind me. I just got back to the U.S. about 4 days ago. So just
Congratulations. You moved, I guess, from New Zealand, right, where you were working back to the U.S. And you've made this, shift into YouTube full time now that you have a Patreon following and a great channel. How has that been for you?
I pretty much already been full time. I was efficient with my day-to-day work at my job, and I made a lot of space in my life for the YouTube channel. But now it's good to be able to fully devote myself to it and free myself up a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. So Jordan, I want to go into some kind of time where you can help us kind of parse through where Tesla might be, you know, with their battery plans. I know some of this will be conjecture or just, you know, our opinion, but I wanted to go back to 2 years ago, almost year and a half or so, to Tesla's battery day, where they announced these big plans to reduce the cost per kilowatt by 56%, but also to boost the energy density and range by 54%, also to reduce the overall investment per kilowatt hour that it takes to build a factory by 69%. So just on a high level, where do you think Tesla is with their ambitious plans? Are they, you think, on track to meet these type of crazy goals? And, you know, do you think they're in the middle of it, or, you know, still in the first kind of, you know, third, or where are they in this process?
I think they're still at the very beginning, because I think it's at Battery Day, they showed one slide where they showed their cost diverging. I think it looked like it was at some point in 2022. Yeah. So it's, at Battery Day, they laid out plans for the next, it looked to me like the next 3 to 4 years. And it was the full stack of the material supply chain. Whereas with this year, it's just going to be the battery cells that they're going to start ramping. And then hopefully later this year or next year, they start up their cathode plant and then their lithium processing plant. So I'd say they're at the very beginning. And then in terms of, you also mentioned energy density. I think that they're at the beginning of that as well. We'll see, but I'm assuming that they're going to start with a small amount of silicon and increase silicon over the next few years as they get more comfortable with it. And silicon, all you really need to know with that is silicon increases the energy density of the battery cells.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for this initial, let's say, batch of 4680 cells they're planning, you know, for this year, how much savings do you think that they will accrue?
My assumption is that right now they're probably near the cost of the cells that they're getting from Panasonic or other suppliers. I don't think they're getting a big savings now, and they may not even be getting a savings, but it's I think that will come with time. Right now they're just scaling Kato Road, and Kato Road is good for about 10 gigawatt hours. When they start matching the volume of the people who are currently supplying them, like Panasonic and LG, then we should start to see the cost decline. At least that's my assumption.
Okay, got it. I noticed, I remember one of the challenges Tesla had was with their dry electrode technology, having some, you know, issues, but I haven't heard much recently about, you know, that being an issue. Have you heard anything about kind of the status of that?
No, it's, you hear things through the grapevine, and then Tesla gives updates at their earnings calls. And the feeling that I got over the past two earnings calls was, I think it was the second quarter earnings call, they were saying, hey, we have some issues that we need to sort out with the dry battery electrode. And then in the last earnings call, they didn't mention that, and they focused instead on the battery packs. And I think that's important because to me, it sounds like they have the battery cells. Now they need to make sure that the pack is fully tested and qualified and ready to go. In the past, the battery pack has caused issues for their ramps. So it, to me, it's a good sign that they're focused on the pack now. And hopefully they're finished or nearly finished with that qualification process. Yep. And we'll see those going into vehicles soon.
Got it. I mean, it seems like between Austin and Berlin, Tesla is prioritizing Austin for the 4680 cells. I mean, we have these photos, that show kind of this whole floor in the Austin Gigafactory with battery equipment. When you look at that yourself, like, what was your impression? Do you think is it just a pilot line that they have, or do you think they're really trying to, make a lot of 4680 cells ASAP?
I think they're trying to make as many as they can, as soon as they can, provided that the raw materials are there. And some of the deals that we've seen recently gives us an indication that they are lining up supply. This was something I was hoping you were going to bring up in this discussion today, because it looks to me, Elon originally said that Berlin was going to be the first 4680 cell production, and the building that they're going to be manufacturing 4680s from in Berlin, it's not even complete yet. And even the plans that I think it was Tobias Lind, he did a lot of posts on those plans a few months ago. Those indicated that they wanted to be finished with the building by something like October, November, and start installing equipment. So it looks like they've kind of slowed things down in Berlin and shifted those resources into Austin and punched the gas there. So yeah, I think hopefully they're installing 100 gigawatt hours of capacity there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, how do you envision this playing out this year? Because, it seems like a risky bet with these 4680 cells, because you have, your legacy, let's say 2170 cells and packs. Do you think Tesla in Austin just goes with the 2170 cells initially and then slowly kind of introduces the 4680 cells and packs? Or, do you see some other scenario playing out? What's your kind of take?
At the moment, it looks like they've definitely said that Berlin is going to use the 2170s instead of the 4680s, which is a change of tune from what they advised last year. So I think they're going to try to begin the ramp in Austin with the 4680. Given how, when we heard from them 3 months ago that they said they just needed to test the pack. If they've qualified the pack now, then those packs should be ready. If not now, then very soon. So if we do see some 2170 vehicles coming off the line in Austin, I would think it would be a very short-term stopgap measure. Maybe they're shipping the packs in from another factory and installing them there rather than manufacturing them at Austin. But that's just my point of view. I'm really looking to get to see that qualified in the upcoming earnings update, which I think is going to be an exciting one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Elon might be on the conference call as well, giving, a product update. We'll see. So, with Austin and these 4680 cells, how much of the inside do you think is different than the 2170s? Like, for example, are they, like you mentioned in the very beginning, like Tesla would have to have their own cathode, factory, their lithium processing, all this other stuff. Are they gradually kind of changing the inside of the 4680 over time to make it, better, more efficient, higher density? Or do you think the bulk of the changes are in this initial kind of battery cell right now?
Okay, well, there's two sides of that. There's the chemistry itself, and then there's where you source the materials from. And that goes from the intermediaries, which is basically the things that you put into cell to make the cell, all the way to the lithium mine. In terms of the chemistry, I'm assuming it's going to remain relatively stable over the next year or two, and then maybe every year or 2 years, they do a big update to the chemistry. Now, in terms of where they get the materials from, there's a couple stages to that. I'm assuming that they have a miniature cathode production plant at Cato Road, because at Battery Day, they showed an image of their cathode processing machine. So I think they're making that cathode material in-house. Now, further down the road, they can source their lithium from an in-house source, but I'm assuming they're getting their lithium from an outside source at the moment. And we're not going to see that switched over for another, I'm assuming, 2 years. where they set up their lithium hydroxide plant. And that will, as they said at Battery Day, that'll cut 30% off the cost of the lithium that they put in their batteries. So yeah, for now, I think the chemistry is going to stay the same, and they're going to use in-house cathode. I don't think they're getting it from the outside. And then the lithium, they can just cut that over at a later date.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's say these first, you know, Model Y vehicles come out of Austin, and let's say hypothetically they do have 4680 cells. These cells, I mean, I'm assuming they will have a higher energy density, you know, longer range, et cetera. What do you think Tesla does? Do you think they just put in less of these cells to kind of, you know, match the current range? Or do you think they actually, you know, increase the range of the Model Y coming out of Austin? But then what happens to these other Model Ys, let's say in Fremont? And there's this big dichotomy of, you know, oh, 4680 Model Ys and 2170 Model Ys. How do you think Tesla rolls out, you know, these new cells in vehicles?
Well, there's... On Twitter, I had a couple chats and call-in with Whole Mars Catalog Omar, and I think his view on it is, I agree with, which is maybe they're going to do the higher-end vehicles out of Texas using the 4680s, and then at Fremont, they're going to continue using the 2170s and eventually cut that over. That makes the most sense to me, because otherwise you don't want to have the same vehicle in the same country using different battery cells, unless they're different trims. I think that would be the exception to the rule. Kind of like how they're using LFP for the standard range. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll see the whole standard range go LFP, and then the upper end of the range use 4680s. And that's another thing we have to factor in this year is the LFP cells. I think they're going to switch from the 2170 to CATL LFP. Hopefully this year, but definitely within the next couple of years.
What's the difference between the CATL LFPs and the 2170s?
Well, the CATL LFP, that'll just be a cheaper pack.
Okay.
Yeah, it's, well...
I mean, are you assuming they're going to change the format to 4680s out of CATL as well, or?
Oh, no. So the prismatic CATL battery cells. So I'll just,
okay, got it.
Yeah. So, and I just said that the CATL LFP pack is cheaper, but it might only be slightly cheaper. The main thing that's going to allow them to do these prismatic cell to pack LFP battery packs from CATL, it'll free up Tesla's 2170 cell supply for other things.
I mean, do you think they'll use that just in Shanghai, or do you think they'll use that in the US too?
Well, there's already a few that they did in the US, and I think that was a test run possibly. So I would like to see them ship the packs over from CATL and put them in at Fremont. Or maybe they do plan on producing the battery packs as well.
Yeah.
In the United States for the CATL cells, but CATL seems to be doing a good job for Tesla in Shanghai. So you may as well just free up Tesla's engineering resources and ship the whole pack over, is my view. Yeah.
If Tesla does 4680 cells in Austin, let's say this is the higher trim, let's say long range and performance, what do you think the range could be from these cars?
Well, there's a lot of debate on this because they could significantly increase the range, but I don't think they will because I think they're going to ration the cells. What I think they're going to do is they're going to put a similar size pack in, maybe slightly larger, but because the battery pack is going to be a structural pack, it's going to have the giga castings. Overall, the vehicle is going to be lighter weight and more efficient. So even if they put the same size battery pack in, you would still see a little bit of a range boost. But if they also put a few extra cells in there, you could see. What is the long range Model Y at the moment? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's 330 or so, maybe.
Yeah, I would like to see that at least get up to the range of the Model 3, so that the range matches.
That's true. Yeah, that makes sense. It seems like 400 is like this new kind of high standard for Tesla, right, with the Model S and stuff. So I'm curious if these higher range, higher trim Model Ys will reach 400. I mean, it's obviously they could do it. It's just whether or not, you know, it meets their whole framework of, you know, what they want to do.
What I'd like to see is maybe If they put the new 4680 pack in both the 3 and the Y, you get closer to 400 miles of range out of the long range Model 3 and mid to high 300s out of the Y. But I don't think they're going to cut the Model 3 over for a while.
Interesting. One of the stories of, it seems like recently, is kind of this emergence of CATL as, you know, a major supplier of batteries for Tesla. Rumor has it with this whole factory they've set up, you know, near Shanghai to supply batteries. What's going on with that? It's like, you know, have they been working on this factory for a long time, or did it just pop up suddenly? Like, you know, what's your take on it?
Well, that came up when I was in the air between New Zealand and the US, and I haven't had a chance to look into that yet. But if those rumors are true, that's absolutely phenomenal, because usually it takes, you know, at least 6 months to get a decent ramp on your battery supply up to, say, I don't know, 50 to 75% of capacity. So if you have, you know, 100 gigawatt hour plant, it's going to take you a year or over a year to actually get near that 100 gigawatt hours. And it looks like, you know, based on these rumors, it just popped up out of the blue. Now, if CATL can keep doing that over the next 5 years, ramping those quickly, that completely changes the dynamic of the cell supply. But I'm going to hold fire and wait until I have more information.
Going back to Austin and Berlin, so do you imagine the current strategy is, okay, Berlin is taking a little bit longer time, so we'll do 2170s. For Austin, let's say, let's focus on this 4680. It might be a little bumpy in the beginning, but, you know, that's okay. We'll just ramp cars with 4680s. And by the time they get things ironed out, let's say in 6 months or 9 months, then they can kind of port over things to Berlin. Is that kind of the idea, you think? Or
what, yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's, God, what was it? I was looking through the plans. And yeah, it, because there's the manufacturing of the cells, and then there's the manufacturing of the pack. They could use Austin as a flywheel and start sending cells over to Berlin, and they could start assembling the packs there. Or maybe they're just waiting until they completely have the 4680 line up and running there. Mm-hmm. But just having Cato and Austin, it puts them in a good position to ramp Berlin. So, and one thing to keep in mind is it's mainly going to be from Cato Road at the moment that they're getting the cells. Because as I said a moment ago, with CATL, it takes some time to ramp these new production lines. So I don't see them hitting a decent amount of scale at Austin until the second half of this year, because they're installing the equipment now, or they have been installing the equipment. So
got it. That makes sense. Yeah. So longer term, you know, I guess we could see perhaps the 4680 cells, nickel base being more for the higher trim. For the standard range, kind of the lower trim, it seems like we're moving things to iron phosphate, right? Lithium iron phosphate cells. Will this be, and then I'm guessing there's 4680 format, right? But also you're saying there could be this prismatic format from CATL too, right?
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah, there's a lot to untangle there, because now we have all these different cell types and all these different chemistries. It's like, well, how do we untangle this mess? I guess we're just work through them one by one. Tesla, eventually, I think they will produce a 4680 LFP cell. Mm-hmm. The Chinese manufacturers, they're pretty much strictly the prismatic LFP, and they've been building their future architectures around it. So I think they'll continue to use that. There is some positives and negatives, whichever choice you make, whether you go to the 4680 or the prismatic for LFP. But overall, I think like the cylindrical LFP probably will have a little bit lower energy density at the pack level, because you have those extra spaces between the cylinders. But I think Tesla should be able to hit a decent range with the 4680 cell with the LFP. Mm-hmm. Now, I do think there's going to be other suppliers that start producing the 4680 nickel cell. And we'll start seeing those. I'd be surprised if we saw them this year. They're starting their pilot lines this year, a lot of the other companies. Mm-hmm. And next year, there'll be, I think that's when we'll see a flood of 4680s on the market.
What companies are doing their pilot lines for 4680?
It sounds like all the major suppliers are doing 4680 lines. And even the minor suppliers, it's Tesla unleashed the 4680 and everybody's like, okay, that's the new standard. We're going to upgrade for the 2170. And that's just the way it is now. Mm-hmm. I'll be interested to see how the design of those differs, but I think they have to be, I'm assuming Tesla's feeding information to like LG Chem and Panasonic to let them know how the cell is designed so it can fit perfectly in their vehicles. So yeah. I hope there's information sharing going on there.
Mm-hmm. What do you think happens with Nevada Gigafactory? Do they just continue on with 2170 cell production for the foreseeable future? Or do you think that becomes a place where they add on, 4680 lines, or do they eventually switch over? What's your kind of assessment here?
My assumption is the 2170 lines that they currently have in place there, they're going to keep using those. And then when they have the 4680 prototype line in Japan up and running, I think they're going to copy that over to Giga Nevada for the new lines. But I think they're just keep humming along with the 2170 lines in the same way that when they that they've continued to produce the 18650 cell for, I don't know, what is it, the past 15 years in Japan?
Yeah. I mean, is there some tension here? Because typically Nevada Gigafactory was this kind of partnership where Tesla provided, more the infrastructure, the building, et cetera, and Panasonic came in with more of the equipment and the making of the battery cells. Tesla would take care of the pack and everything else. But with Cato Road and this 4680 pilot line, it would make sense with Tesla's, investment with all the manufacturing, the tooling, the equipment to port that line over to, let's say, Nevada Gigafactory to make 4680 cells. But then Panasonic is in charge of the battery cell, manufacturing there. So you're saying that they might just set up a line in Japan first, right? And hone that before importing. But how can their line, do you think their line will be comparable to Tesla's, Cato line at all? Or do you think it's okay if it's not as efficient? It's just Tesla is so starved of battery cells, they'll take anything, basically.
Tesla is able to make so much margin on their vehicles that I think they're just happy to get any cells as long as they meet, as long as they get a fair deal on those cells. Now, I don't think Panasonic's line is going to be as efficient and produce the cells as cheaply as Tesla's line, because I think Tesla's line contains several advancements, such as the dry battery electrode. The form factor with Panasonic switching to the larger 4680 form factor, it will allow them to produce those battery cells cheaper than the 2170 battery cells. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's any friction there. I think Tesla is so starved for battery cells compared to what their ambitions are that they're just, you keep building out that plant in Nevada, we'll ramp. We want everybody ramping all the cells that they can get, and we will take all the cells that you can produce. And I think, then they can start putting those overflow cells into energy storage.
Does it make sense for Tesla to share their technology? Saying, hey, Panasonic, here, we have these machines here to do this, or, this process, because we want to help you out to make more cells at a cheaper cost. What do you think?
Yeah, I think some technologies they're going to share, other technologies they aren't. I think it makes sense for them to share how they did the tabless electrode. But in terms of the dry battery electrode, I don't think that they'll share that. I think Panasonic and these other manufacturers are pretty comfortable with the manufacturing processes that they're already using. And they might actually have in mind their own future technology, which is similar to dry battery electrode. There's a few companies that are working on things that are similar to DBE, but don't overlap with the patents. So there's a few different options there. And what that'll also allow them to do is, it may be a drop-in solution that Panasonic can use for their existing 2170 battery cell lines and make better use of the cell lines that they currently have. So I think Tesla has an edge, I don't know, somewhere between 3 to 5 years on the actual coating of the electrodes. Mm-hmm. And everybody else is going to follow suit with their own version at some point.
Yeah. It seems to be one of the stories ongoing right now with Tesla and batteries is at Battery Day, they pretty much came out of the blue and said, we're going to leapfrog all the existing battery makers that have made batteries for decades and decades and all their expertise and experience. We're just going to, you know, just take a jump ahead of them, you know, just like that. And I don't know if anyone or many people really believed, you know, that Tesla is like has the audaciousness to actually say that and do that, but the execution to actually, you know, make it happen. But yeah, it's going to be definitely an interesting year because if we can get real vehicles, right, with the, you know, these 4680 cells, with these new technologies, it's going to be a big statement where Tesla is saying, yeah, we're for real. We're really going to be, you know, the best battery manufacturer and much quicker than people realize. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, you're reflecting my thoughts perfectly. I thought it was absolutely amazing and ambitious what Tesla decided to do. And then not only that, not only are they saying we're going to be the best battery cell manufacturer in the world and we're implementing technologies that we weren't expecting to see for another 3 to 5 years, we're also moving upstream on the battery supply chain. So it was far more ambitious than what I anticipated. I was fairly accurate about what I did predict. But what I expect is how many pies that Tesla has fingers in. They just have, they're getting into everything. And it's, that was one of the main lessons I learned from Battery Day is don't Tesla's willingness to enter new areas of manufacturing that they haven't been in before. So, I'd like to see Tesla manufacture everything that they can because they seem to, they're capable. They have very capable people.
Yeah. I want to go into this whole issue of supply chain and materials. So supposedly J.B. Straubel was on CNBC recently, I think just yesterday or so, talking about how there could be this supply chain crunch in the future as other EV manufacturers all try to ramp production of electric vehicles. It's possible that people haven't, you know, these companies haven't prepared enough, right, to meet this demand. And there could be, obviously, this shortage of batteries, but also it's kind of this mad scramble, you know, to get the resources and to ramp production. Is perhaps probably one of the reasons why Tesla is aggressively trying to secure, you know, the supply chain themselves. What do you see? I know you track a lot of this stuff and the agreements and all this stuff. I think Tesla signed something with Talon Metals about nickel. Was that a significant, you know, agreement? And are you seeing this happening across the board where Tesla is just, you know, securing, you know, contracts, you know, for the future to make sure that they have enough, you know, to ramp batteries?
Yeah. Well, there's about three or four questions wrapped up in that. So I think what they're basically doing with Syrah Resources, which they're looking at them, tapping them for some graphite. Piedmont, they're tapping them for some lithium. Talon, they're tapping them for nickel. But I think they're just wetting their beak. Compared to the amount of Tesla materials Tesla is going to need, this is just a teaser. This is a sample platter. They're going to need 10 times as much as they're looking to source. Because I only had a quick chance to look at the information that's been released, but it looked like they're requesting a set amount of material. Like I think it was maybe 60 or 75,000 tons over, but I don't think that was on an annual basis. I think that was over the course of several years, but I need to dig further into that. If it is for like a yearly basis, let's assume it was 75,000 tons of nickel. Roughly, let's say that would be 75 gigawatt hours. And while Tesla's planning on, you know, just in the next year ramping up 100 gigawatt hours. So I think overall Tesla's strategy is to make agreements with the biggest players in the game. And that because those companies have the most resources to help match Tesla's scaling. But I think it's also important for Tesla to go out and source some materials from other companies just to make sure that they have other options out there and to support the growth of these other smaller manufacturers.
Yeah. It's interesting. In the December quarter, it seems like Tesla has reached an annual run rate of vehicle production of around 1.2 million cars. I think part of the advantage of reaching that scale first and the fastest is they get that insight into the supply chain. You know, they see where things are breaking, where there is shortages, you know, where they need to invest more in. Whereas, you know, take another company that is barely getting started, you know, and also perhaps, you know, they're relying on a, you know, a third party, you know, battery producer like LG Chem or Panasonic or Samsung. They don't really have the direct, you know, first source exposure to the vulnerability of the supply chain and mm-hmm. the raw materials, right, that Tesla has themselves. And it just seems like, yeah, there is that advantage, and it seems like it could be pretty profound, you know, because Tesla, if they take it seriously, they're going to make some big moves to secure, you know, raw materials.
Well, my view for a while has been that this is what could be what makes or breaks a lot of OEMs, even the ones that are trying to cut over to electrify their vehicles, is if they don't have the raw materials, they're sunk. And Tesla, who would you want to sign agreement with? Would you want to sign agreement with Tesla, who's, you know, the biggest, best, most efficient? Or would you want to sign agreement with somebody who's lukewarm about their EV strategy? Now, you want to supply with somebody who's confident and, yeah, you want a strong partner whenever you supply them. And coming back to your point about one thing that J.B. Straubel said is, a lot of these companies, they said, hey, let's buy some batteries. Let's just start some battery factories, sign some agreements. But they never bothered to look to see if the materials were lined up for those battery factories. And I think that a lot of those factories are not going to necessarily fail, but they're going to choke. And it may take them a lot longer to scale. Some of them might not even be able to scale because we're already seeing raw material shortages. Unless you have those materials locked in, but based on what I'm hearing, Tesla so far has their materials locked in, but I don't know how far into the future they're looking on that. Is that like 6 months or a year? How far down the road does Tesla have their materials secured? And I think that's one of my biggest curiosity for Tesla right now, but they tend to keep a lot of this close to their chest. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me, you know, as a layman, like, on this topic, that CATL just seems to be like really executing very, very well with batteries, and not just the technology, but also ramping. Like they actually, are showing, you know, capability in that front. And it seems to me that, you know, perhaps CATL is kind of the hope for, you know, non-Tesla automakers, you know, if they can somehow magically continue to improve and secure the resources themselves and create battery factories for other automakers, that maybe the automakers, you know, some of them might be okay if CATL like basically like bails them out with, you know, the batteries. But then again, you have, you know, prioritization, not all the automakers are going to have the right deals, and CATL might, you know, favor certain companies, maybe their own domestic, you know, or see, I think, well, actually, you know, China companies, I don't know what, but what do you think? Does CATL like change your outlook or attitude toward OEMs at all? Like, if they were able to partner with them more?
Well, the thing is, there's a few, this is an interesting discussion because Tesla, the efficiency of their vehicles is, I don't know what, at least 10% and probably more like 20% more efficient than other auto manufacturers. So if Tesla is getting 250 miles out of a CATL battery pack, that would mean somebody else would get, what, 210 miles, 200 miles of range out of the same battery pack just because they're so much less efficient. Now, the word is that in China, Tesla switching their LFP vehicles over to a slightly larger battery pack, and we may be seeing CATL battery packs in Tesla vehicles providing about 270 miles of range. But still, for another auto manufacturer, that would be what, 220, 230 miles of range? Maybe if they're, you know, they up their game a little bit more, like 240 miles of range, but still, they're just not going to be able to get the same range out of those vehicles. And I haven't looked enough into this, but I'm assuming, based on what I've seen, that most of these auto manufacturers are going for nickel-based chemistries due to their lower efficiency. There really isn't, I don't know if there's an option for them to use LFP. They need high nickel chemistries because They need the range because they're starting at the top end. They're not making budget vehicles with these battery cells. They're making expensive electric vehicles, mm-hmm. and people expect range. So if they can stay afloat until the mid-2020s and get their vehicle level efficiency up, then yeah, they can take it. They can harness CATL. But once again, how many of those cells is Tesla going to be sponging up? And I think it's going to be most of them.
Huh, so, interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. Is there any automaker that sticks out that you're like, oh, they're actually investing enough, or not even say enough, but they're prioritizing, let's say, you know, the battery materials, or, you know, just production? Any company come in mind?
Well, there's several companies that are making the right noises, but making the right noises mm-hmm. and getting something done are two different things, because you see Tesla not making a lot of noise, but kicking ass. Mm-hmm. Whereas you have like GM, VW, they're saying a lot of the right things and they're signing agreements, but there's just signing agreement with somebody for supply doesn't mean everything's set. There's an entire supply chain you have to look after, not just one agreement in isolation. So we have to see how it plays out. Tesla's proven that they're good at managing their battery cell supply and the materials that go in to make those batteries, where other manufacturers, we haven't seen that proof yet. Mm-hmm. I think we'll start seeing that play out over the next year or two. But that's my view, at least.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Yeah, it's fascinating because, you know, Tesla, people think of Tesla as an auto company, a car company, but, you know, they've started among many other kind of startups or companies inside the company, they've started a battery company, basically, you know, within the company that's actually not just producing, but actually, you know, like securing supply chain, you know, improving the technology. They're making a lot of their own manufacturing equipment themselves, you know, like that isn't out there. So it's like another company too, you know, actually making the machine that makes, right, the batteries. And there's so much complexity, but on the flip side, it doesn't seem like Tesla is touting it, or, you know, like flamboyant with it, or saying like, oh, this is, besides what happened in Battery Day, right? But since then, it just seems like they're just heads down, you know, executing and you know, working through challenges. And it's quite fascinating to watch this. It's just, it just seems so unusual. I don't know. Yeah.
It's subdued. And it's like, when I'm looking to invest in a company, I look to invest in a company that doesn't, blare their marketing horn. There's a lot of companies that they lean heavily on the marketing department to put out these facts and figures about what they're doing. But if you look into it, there's not a lot of substance. They don't tell you the most important things that you need to know. Whereas Tesla, when in their presentation, they focused on the engineering around what they're doing. And it was a casual, relaxed conversation that wasn't really polished. They were up there wearing t-shirts. It was basically saying, hey, we're engineers and this is what we're going to do. It wasn't an executive level team that had been consulting the marketing department a lot, going, all right, if you use this buzzword, people are going to glom onto it, and the media is going to soak it up. Yeah. And you see that with a lot of battery companies. I'm just going to talk about a pet peeve here real quick, is a lot of times you see startups or companies making claims about what their batteries can do. And a lot of times that what they're saying is true, but what you have to pay attention to is what they leave out. Okay, great. You can make a battery cell that hits 500 watt hours per kilogram. How much is that battery cell going to cost? When are you going to manufacture it? Where are you going to manufacture it? Just those basic questions. And that's what Tesla focused on in their presentation. This is how we're going to manufacture this. When they opened up the Battery Day presentation, continuous motion. They were just beating that drum of manufacturing is our core competency. So it gave me a lot of comfort, because that's the hard part.
Yeah, definitely. Like if Tesla was like a, I wouldn't say typical, but let's say a different type of company, they might be releasing these like press releases, like, you know, every month or two, saying, hey, you know, we've, you know, uncovered this, you know, earth-shattering discovery on the cell technology. We can, or we have a prototype for 800-mile car, or, you know, or they would tout maybe the dry electrode technology more and just thought, like, we made a breakthrough on this or something. But you don't see any of that, you know? They're making zero press releases, you know,
on this stuff. Which makes people want, like, shareholders, it makes people a bit nervous, like, oh, is Tesla actually doing anything? No, that's... What you don't get is they're busy doing rather than talking. So it would be nice to get more updates, but I've been satisfied with what they've been providing. Because for me, at least, it's been enough. The little tidbits that they've been dropping us on the earnings calls.
Yeah, awesome. Jordan, it's been fun catching up with you, talking about all this crazy stuff happening. Yeah, I think the world is changing so fast. I think... the whole move to sustainable energy and the role that batteries are playing in it is such crucial, you know, it's a crucial part. And what we see in the next 5 or 10 years is going to radically shape, you know, the whole world in terms of how it uses energy. And there's so many moving pieces here, I think.
Yeah.
I'm glad you've got your channel and your focus on this, and you're providing just a valuable service to people who want to learn more. I'll go ahead and link to your YouTube channel in the video description, The Limiting Factor, focusing on batteries and new technologies. I'll also link to your Twitter profile in the video description. Any other kind of places people can follow you, or any other kind of, you know, last words?
No, it's mainly my YouTube and Twitter. Those are the best two places to reach me.
Okay, awesome. We'd love to do this again, catch up on, you know, the battery improvements or developments along the way. But thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, cool.